you're listening to Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders podcast network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, what is going on? Eddie Pascal and producer Trav in Henderson, Nevada and San Jose, California, respectively. And when we were talking about the show this week and how we wanted to kind of attack it and build it out, we kind of came to the consensus that we still didn't feel like we wanted to do our quote-unquote normal show, right? We're living in this incredible moment of civil activism, of people standing up and protesting and demanding that their voices are heard. And we just didn't feel like it was good or in good faith to kind of put an end to the conversation. And obviously last week we had Zay Jones on, who talked about his incredible story, of empathy, of compassion, of positivity that he encountered at the home goods store. And we just kind of wanted to keep that conversation going. We wanted to keep that proverbial ball rolling. And so this week we're going to welcome in just a few minutes, one of our favorite guys, number 16 for the Silver and Black, another wide receiver, Tyrell Williams. And for those of you who haven't checked it out, Tyrell had a really moving, poignant, important Instagram post last weekend discussing a lot of things, but really talking about his childhood growing up in this small town in Oregon and kind of the racism, the racial injustice, the just unfortunate and just unacceptable things that really happened to him as a kid. And so after we saw that, we reached out to Tyrell to see if he'd be willing to come on and talk to us and share a little bit more about that and why this moment, the moment that we're living in, is so important for him and for athletes and really for people in general to kind of stand up, to put their, you know, put their foot on the table and say, hey, you have to listen to us. This is no longer okay. So as I said, we're going to welcome in Tyrell in just a few minutes. But before we do that, just a few small housekeeping things on the football side of things that we really wanted to bring to light, because I think it's pretty cool. The PFWA, the Pro Football Writers of America, for the uninitiated, are about to vote on their 2020 awards, and two members of the Silver and Black were nominated, Darren Waller and assistant coach Rod Marinelli. So Darren Waller is nominated for the George Halas Award, and that is an award given to the player or coach who overcame the most adversity to succeed. And if you know anything about Darren's story, he is certainly deserving, certainly fits into that category. So we wish him the best of luck there. And the other Raider who I mentioned also up for an award, Rod Marinelli, who was nominated for the Paul Dr. Z Zimmerman Award. Dr. Z, pretty cool nickname, by the way. And that's the Lifetime Achievement Award as an assistant coach in the NFL. And there were two recipients of that. So Coach Marinelli is up for that one. So hopefully send that positive energy out there, Raider Nation, and we can get a few awards for our guys. And the awards will be announced in full on June 22nd, so just under 2 weeks away. But that's all we wanted to bring up. Obviously, exciting stuff for Darren, for Coach Marinelli, and just a little positivity. And I know all of us are jonesing for football to get back and for us to really get into football. And I promise you guys, we will do that. We will welcome in Boobie Martin once again very soon, I hope. And we're going to have our show of shenanigans. But as I said at the top, that is not going to be what we're going to do this week. It just didn't feel right. So without any further ado, here it is, as I tease at the top, our conversation with Tyrell Williams. Man, we've started all these conversations the past couple months, and especially the past 10 days, with kind of just the same thought and the same question. How are you doing through all of this?
Shoot, man, I've been doing pretty good. You know, I'm enjoying the quarantine, I guess, you know, being able to just stay at home and chill. You know, I'm a homebody, so being able to just be home and hang out, still get my workouts in and stuff. So I've been enjoying it. Obviously, it sucks, you know, everybody, people getting sick and, you know, having to hear about all that and people dying and stuff. It's pretty tragic, but, you know, all things considered, I've been doing pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what all of us are trying to do, just make the best out of a bad situation. And, you know, another reason we had wanted to have you on this week was because obviously you look at everything that's going on in this country right now. It's a time of hopefully a lot of change. And over the weekend, you took to Instagram, you posted what I thought was a really poignant, well thought out, you know, no word was without purpose thing on Instagram, talking about growing up as a biracial kid in small town Oregon. And there's a lot to get into with that, but I'm just curious off the top, why did you post that when you did? Why was it important for you to do that?
Yeah, I think it's always kind of been something that, you know, as my goal getting to the NFL, I wanted to use my platform. You know, I always wanted to get to the NFL and be able to give back in any way. And I've always been kind of, you know, interested in just, you know, my history, you know, growing up and what my dad and his family and everybody went through, and as well as on my mom's side, you know, being white and my dad being black, and just learning about my culture more and being more involved in that. And then obviously with everything that just went on, you know, I really wanted to use my platform, you know, and just let people see, you know, a different side of it. You know, there's a lot of police brutality stuff going on, but just like everyday, you know, racism that is blatant that goes on, you know, I feel like I endured a lot of that. And I think a lot of kids and a lot of people do endure a lot of that, that, you know, people just don't even pay attention to or realize that it's actually going on. So I think that's where a lot of it starts, is just, you know, little things like that building up and people not really realizing what they're saying or what they're doing and how it affects people.
I mean, you were really eloquent in kind of how you laid out what is really just a really, you know, tragic portion of kind of your life and the things that you've had to deal with. But what was your thought process in terms of actually like writing that? Did you workshop that with people? Did you reach out to your parents ahead of time? Like, did you talk to anyone in terms of like how you wanted to have your message come off?
No, I just wanted to write it. You know, I didn't want to have anybody else, you know, take away or want to add stuff to what I had. Yeah, I just gave it to my girlfriend, you know, and had her spell check it for me, because my spelling is pretty rough. But other than that, you know, I wanted to just be, you know, what I wanted to get across. You know, I didn't want anybody to be like, oh, I don't know if I'd say that, or I would add this. You know, I wanted it to be really something that just I felt, you know, and it was kind of one's kind of experiences that really stuck out to me, you know, that I really remembered from growing up, and stuff that I thought people would, you know, not really understand. I guess they obviously have never been through it, but just they wouldn't think that that stuff was going on, you know. And I think it was just simple stuff, but it's stuff that, you know, really stuck with me. And I think, you know, it formed me into who I am. You know, I'm a pretty quiet guy, and I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, what I went through as a little kid, just not really feeling like I was comfortable to, you know, voice myself, you know. And as I still am now, I'm still pretty quiet. So I really wanted to use this platform in that time just to, you know, get off what I had on my chest.
You know, and there's so many things that you put into that post, and there's so many, like you mentioned, those little anecdotes, those moments in time that you remember from being a kid. But one of them that really stuck out to me was the kids that would call you names when you were playing sports. But the thing that really stood out to me with that is you brought up the fact that it was only in sports where they couldn't see your face, right? Where if you have to put your name behind it, if you have to look another guy in the face and tell him and call him a name, that changes things a lot. And I think it kind of just speaks to this kind of culture of, I don't want to say fear, like fear, but no one's going to do that. I don't want to say no one, but it's so much harder to do that, to look a guy in the face and tell him that when you don't feel like there's any repercussions to it. You know what I mean?
For sure. You know, I feel like that was the biggest thing. You know, guys would yell it when I'm running back to the huddle. You know, it's even still in football, it's never to my face. They're never just going to blatantly say it right to me. It's always going to be when I have my back turned and walking away. And there's just one time that I just remember one kid saying it, and then we ended up finding out who it was. And then I don't think the school wanted him to apologize. He wanted to apologize, but I didn't think it was anything that, it wasn't an apology because he was actually sorry. You know, I feel like it was more just because he was kind of picked out and people found out it was him. You know, I think at first he kind of denied that it was him, and then he finally admitted it, and then he wanted to apologize. But I feel like it's kind of a backhanded apology when it comes like that, you know. And that was really the only time that I ever really found out exactly who it was that had said something like that. So after that incident, it was just kind of like I kind of had a jaded feeling for a while, you know, and then it took me a while just to be able to get those feelings out and kind of move past them.
You know, the other thing that in reading your post and reading over it, you know, a couple times that really stood out to me is, you know, you and I are more or less the same age. I think you're maybe like 6 months older than I am, but, you know, we grew up in the same time period, more or less. But the fact that your dad had to come to your elementary school to take you out of class, to take you on a walk, to kind of explain what was going on, like that blew my mind that in 21st century United States, like that is something that had to happen. Like, do you remember like that conversation, what that conversation was like between you and your dad when the rest of the kids in your class are learning, they're in school, they're being educated, but young Tyrell has to come out and go for a walk with his dad so his dad can give him the lay of the land of what things are really like in this country?
Yeah, it was definitely weird. You know, I definitely remember just feeling uncomfortable. I don't exactly remember what was said in class or whatever, you know, brought that upon, but I do just remember it being something, you know, about racial stuff that we were talking about in the class, whether it was civil rights or whatever. And I just remember a comment being made, something like that. And instead of, you know, disciplining or confronting the kids, it was more just kind of take me out of the situation, you know. And I think that is good, you know, because the teachers and stuff may not have experienced that and know how to, you know, help me through it. And bringing my dad in is definitely good, but it needs to be a teaching lesson for those kids, you know, and for other kids that's in the class, not the people who said it, but just for everybody to hear that is not okay, you know. And I feel like that kind of allowed other people to think that maybe it was okay or it wasn't a big deal, you know. And then that was like second grade, first grade when that happened, and it kind of just, you know, that was like really my first experience with that. And it kind of, from there, it just, more incidents kept happening. It was more just, we'll have them apologize, rather than just bring it to light, you know, and make it a teaching moment and make people uncomfortable. That's what bothered me the most looking back, is I was always the one that was uncomfortable through the whole experience. It was never anybody else having to step out of their comfort zone and actually having to learn from what they said, you know. And so I think that's something that I really want to get more involved with now, is just teaching and making people be uncomfortable and have those conversations.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of, you know, what the past call of 2 weeks has resulted in, is we're having those uncomfortable conversations, right? Where you're calling out that old cousin of yours that, you know, says things that he shouldn't say. And, you know, we're finally being uncomfortable and we're listening to people. But I think it's important, Tyrell, in your story, like, you didn't grow up in New York City or LA or a big city. Like, you grew up in relatively small town Oregon, which is such a different place than like a New York or a San Francisco or anywhere in the Bay. And when you think back to growing up where you grew up and how you grew up, like, what do you think that portion of that story had to do with kind of the way that you look at things now?
You know, as far as how I look at things, you know, when I see like what's going on around the world, you know, I can definitely see how people, racism is alive, you know, and it's definitely alive, and people, you know, just kind of go off of just quick, like what they're feeling, you know, and rather than getting to know people and, you know, and just like having love for people and not, you know, flipping a switch right on somebody just because of little things, you know. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing that's hit me, is just people aren't understanding, people are not getting uncomfortable and just learning, you know. And everybody, there's a lot of people that's just ignorant, you know. Maybe a lot of people aren't racist, but they're just ignorant to the things that they say and how they may come across to people of color. And so, you know, growing up in a small town like that, you know, and that's another thing I kind of just been in thinking and looking back, is just how many comments and things that I kind of just brushed off and thought like, oh, he's just joking, it's not a big deal, you know. But I think that almost happened daily for me growing up in such a small town. And I think it's, you know, people aren't really, it's not a bad heart, but they're just ignorant, you know. And I think looking back, I really wish I would have checked people more, you know, and just let them know, like, that's not okay, you know, because I was really the only black person that they probably ever have been around or known or anything. And if I don't say anything, then they're going to think that it's okay. So, you know, looking back now, obviously I was a little kid and it would have been hard. But from this point on, you know, I'm definitely not going to allow that anymore. I'm going to check people and just make them uncomfortable. You know, I'm tired of being the only one that was uncomfortable in those situations. So now I'm going to make sure that, you know, going forward, people feel that and know that the things that they say just shouldn't be, you know, let go.
Yeah, and I think what's been kind of interesting for me is obviously my experience, like, I'll never know, like, your experience, right? Like, I'll never know what it's like to be you growing up in small town Oregon. I'll never know what it's like to be a Zay Jones or whoever it is. I'll never know that. Like, as much as I try, as much reading and listening as I do, like, I will never know that experience. But it's been really interesting, and I don't want to say sad in a way, but it is sad to hear how many of you guys, how many African-American players across the sports landscape, right? Doesn't matter if it's football, basketball, whatever it is, that have come out and said, like, hey, I've had a similar experience to Tyrell, where I've been called hurtful names as a kid. I was in X stadium and something happened. And I think that for the first time in a long time, because of people like you, because of other athletes, other people that are using their platforms for good, like, we're now hearing these stories and being like, oh my God, like, I knew this was an issue, but like, this is like an issue. This is not something that we can like brush off for another 6 months and deal with it in 2021. Like, this is something that has to change now.
For sure. Yes. I mean, it goes a lot deeper than just the police brutality that's going on. You know, I think that's obviously awful, and that has to stop. Like, that, there needs to be reform, everything, all that needs to change, and that cannot continue. But I think it's the stuff that also happens behind the scenes, like that builds up to that, you know, the just the blatant racism that goes on with verbal, you know, and how people are just being talked to is, you know, facilitates that. And it just builds up into that violence, you know, and I think cutting it down early, you know, and just not allowing the verbal, you know, blatant racism like that is big and stopping that. And I think it takes guys like us that are just telling our stories, you know, and putting that out there so more people can understand and see how, you know, it's just everywhere, you know, and how it's gone. For me, you know, most of it was when I was growing up in a small town. And as I moved off into California, I definitely didn't see as much, but I do still feel it. And I do definitely do see it, but it's just not allowing those verbal attacks anymore and not brushing it off like it's nothing, because looking back, it definitely did, you know, make me a quiet guy. You know, I keep my opinions and stuff to myself. And I think it definitely has come from my experiences growing up and just not feeling uncomfortable around the crowds I was in and feeling like I was going to be judged much harsher than, you know, people around me. So it kind of just turned me inward and into a quiet guy. And, you know, now I want to kind of just let that stuff out and, you know, let people see my experiences.
I mean, because like you said, like so much of it is education, right? Because no one comes out of the womb a racist, right? Like that's a learned behavior. That's something that you're taught or you're indoctrinated with. And no one comes out hating another person just because of the color of their skin. But Tyrell, I'm curious, we were talking to Zay last week about essentially the same thing. And he said that he's looking for the positives in this. And he goes, you know, this is a chance. This is a moment in our collective history that he hopes can really come and bear fruit to something incredibly positive down the road. But he was saying that one thing that's really been encouraging for him is that the way that the locker room, or I guess the virtual locker room in this case, has handled it. He goes, you know, he's had players, black players, white players, biracial players reach out to him and start this conversation and start this dialogue. How have you kind of seen that portion of it? Where have guys been reaching out to you? Have you guys added another layer to this conversation, this conversation that really the entire country as a whole is having right now?
Yeah, definitely. You know, on the Zoom meetings, you know, it is hard when we're not around each other and not able to just to have those, you know, we have the team meeting, but then not being able to branch off and talk about it together in the locker room and stuff right now, just because obviously we're still all apart. But the stuff we have talked about in the Zoom meetings, team meetings, you know, and guys just being able to give their opinions and their experiences. And I think it just helps everybody, you know, and people, like, even if it's, you know, for me hearing Zay's story, you know, and stuff that I may not even have thought about, and for him, vice versa, and just everybody on the team, you know, and we're all just hearing each other's experiences and being able to understand how people grew up in different forms of racism that they may have felt. And I think it's big, you know, I think it's definitely going to help us all be able to fight it together, you know, and as well as just NBA guys that are speaking out. And I think I'm sure it's happening in every locker room around the NFL, NBA, all sports teams. And then hopefully those conversations that we're having and people posting and getting on stuff like this and just getting the story out, I think it's going to help, you know, people just in smaller towns like where I'm from, hopefully be able to have those conversations. And like the school, the teachers I've talked to from my school, they're talking about making changes and stuff like that. And hopefully I can go back to my school and try and do stuff like that. And hopefully other guys around the league and NBA everywhere is doing stuff like that. And I think we can make big changes.
Yeah, I think that's obviously the hope of everyone, right? That's the collective hope, as we come out of this moment even better, more tolerant, more equal than we went into it with. And, you know, one other thing that Zay said, he said that, you know, it's one thing to have the players, your peers kind of reach out to you to kind of share this collective moment that you guys have lived throughout your childhood. But he said that he was really encouraged about the fact that John Gruden, that Mike Mayock, guys who are, you know, call what it is, older white guys have come out and said, like, hey, we want to be better. We need to be better. If there's anything that we can do to help you, let us know. As a guy that, you know, plays for Coach Gruden, that obviously has a relationship with Mike, has that been encouraging for you to kind of see that portion of it playing aside, but to have those two kind of be allies for you guys as well?
Definitely. I think that's the most important thing. You know, like you said, older white guys like that, you know, it's the guys like that that need to speak up, to have the loudest voices, that's going to help, you know, everybody see and pay attention. You know, they're a lot of ones with the power and stuff to be able to make changes, and they have a loud voice. You know, we can say as much as we want, and we've said a lot as the police brutality has continued, but it's voices like that that are going to cause or force the change, you know. And I think that's huge, you know. And being able to have Gruden and Mayock, they both reached out to me, and it's awesome that the support that they've given me, and I'm sure they're doing it the same for the rest of the guys on the team. So just having them on our side and having them have our back has been huge.
Do you think that, and this might be kind of a big question, but do you think that we're kind of entering like a new age of like athlete activism, if that makes sense? Like guys that are really willing to use their platform and not just talk about, you know, what shoes they're buying or we know what cars, what vacations, but really using the platforms they have to kind of further these social justice initiatives?
Definitely. Yeah, the social media is huge, you know, and guys just being able to feel comfortable to do that and reach a lot of people. You know, and I think obviously Colin Kaepernick starting it, you know, I think a lot of it is attributed to him, you know, and he, you know, he sacrificed his job, you know, he sacrificed everything to be able to, you know, bring awareness to this. And, you know, LeBron, he does everything all the time, bringing, pushing stuff like that, whatever he's passionate about and bringing change, you know. And I think a lot of guys are falling in their footsteps and, you know, feeling more comfortable, confident to do that. And I think it's huge. You know, I think we have louder voices than we give ourselves credit for, and we all need to use them better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just on the back end of that, I think that what's really stood out to me the past couple of weeks is that now is like such a time for so many people to listen to, where to take in everything and to really listen to what the Black community in this country and really around the world is saying, but here in particular, and to not have a response, to not be like, yeah, but to really sit back, to listen, to take in everything, and then figure out a way on the back end to have meaningful change and make meaningful progress going forward. So our kids, our kids' kids aren't dealing with the same issues that you had to deal with as a kid growing up in small town Oregon.
That's huge. Yeah, just being able to listen, you know, and just take everything in and you know, like you said, no but, you know, just listen to the experience and try to attribute it to your life and how you may have seen things and you didn't say anything, whether you're white or Black, and may have seen a form of racism happening. And did you speak up in that time? Or did you kind of just say, do what I did and just be like, oh, it's not a big deal. You know, I think every race needs to start checking that stuff and not allowing it to continue.
Well said. Well, hey man, we appreciate your time so immensely. And hopefully next time I'll see you in person. We can talk about football. We can talk about how many touchdowns, how many times you're going to make reservations for six in 2020. But this is an important conversation to have, man. And good on you for being transparent enough to put that out there. And like I said, dude, you're one of our favorites, and we appreciate you hanging out with us.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you guys.
And a big thank you to Tyrell Williams for being open, for being vulnerable, for sharing his story, for talking about something that is really hard to talk about. I can't even imagine what it's like to be a little kid, to be a first grader, to be a second grader, to be a young elementary school kid and having to deal with kind of the racism and the bigotry that young Tyrell had to deal with. So good on him, man, for being willing to tell that story, for talking to us, and, you know, for coming out on the other side, you know, better, stronger, and hopefully a more compassionate, empathetic person. And I think really Tyrell brought up a good point where he goes, this is the time for athletes to kind of use their platforms to promote these messages of social justice, of reform across our country in all aspects of life. And, you know, I hope that, you know, I said it last week where I think that through this moment, we have a chance to really come out on the other side in a much better, in a more positive place, and to really see some kind of tangible change, and change that a lot of people are so desperately in need for and deserve, to be honest. These people deserve it. And so hopefully we're going to take advantage of this moment, and we're going to really propel ourselves forward as a country. But that's it. We are out of here. We, like I said, we're cutting all the fun shenanigans stuff for another week. Hopefully we'll be back doing our normal shticks, if you will, a week from now. But that's it. We're going to leave you on Tyrell's words. So for everyone here, for Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, engineer Jim, our guest Tyrell Williams, everyone who helps get our little program from A to Z, we thank you deeply, humbly, and oh so sincerely. Oh, actually, before we get out of here, I just want to thank, keeping it positive on the way out again, I just want to thank everyone for the kind wedding wishes from last weekend. I read them all. I appreciate them all. And for all of you who sent one, I want to let everyone know that they don't go unnoticed. And I know I didn't get to respond to everyone. I didn't get to reply to as many people as I wanted to, but I do sincerely appreciate that. Me and the boss were very touched by all that. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And yeah, as I said, we are out of here. Same time, same place next week. And we will catch you guys at that point for hopefully another more lighthearted, shenanigan-filled episode of Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light. on the official Raiders Podcast Network.